Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comic Spotlight 110 for comics originally released on September 16th, 2009. Starting us off in DC is JSA vs. Cobra number 4, and that's both Cobra with a K and a G.I. Joe versus not... See, that's the confusion. It's a JSA versus, not a G.I. Joe versus. They have had Cobra around as a villain in the DC Universe since, what, sometime in the 70s?
Oh, for a long time. He had his own series back, I think.
I think in the 70s he had...
70s, yeah. Around the time that they did that Secret Society of Supervillains series. It only ran like 6 issues or so.
That's only a few issues shorter than the Joker's, which ran for 9 around that same time. I've never liked the character. I've never really hated it. The character never made sense to me. It's like, do you really need a snake-themed kind of, you know, a criminal master, not even criminal mastermind, but a guy with a lot of thugs? You know, sure, they give it the religious bent from time to time or whatever. It just, the character seemed lame, so I went into this kind of skeptical. Did we need a JSA miniseries, much less one where they're going up against Cobra, of all things? So, you know, again, very skeptical going in, but, you know, I like the JSA, so I picked it up.
We didn't need it, but, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of things we don't need, but they give it to us anyway.
Well, there have been a couple we don't need, they give it to us anyways, and we don't like, you know. But I've been loving the series. I thought this has been a very intelligently written series. There were aspects of this issue that, you know, really proved that to me and stuff. And if you like JSA, if you like Mr. Terrific, who's, you know, one of the leads in this story, I really recommend this. I mean, there were just a couple of bits in this issue that I thought were just cool bits. The story overall was great. The art was great. You know, the two-page splash near the end I loved. And there was a thing where, you know, Cobra's using blood magic and all this other stuff, and Mr. Terrific's like, you know, out of his element on that, so he says, okay, let's use, you know, Jakeem Thunder's Thunderbolt, and let's hold a Magic 101 class and get me up to speed kind of thing. And we don't see what goes on in that class, which I think was the right decision. So we don't need to know the rules, but we need to know that there are rules and that Mr. Terrific was smart enough to get educated on that. And there are stuff, you know, things like that throughout the issue where... You know, this could have been just a side little thing for the JSA. It could have been, you know, complete, you know, worthless material. But it reads like really good issues of the JSA, like a really good story arc. And instead of having this and then having to wait for the next one, we're getting two concurrently with this and the main series. So, you know, again, while I went into this miniseries skeptical, I'm glad I got it and, you know, have been really enjoying it. How about you?
Well, you know, this series, I decided to skip this series, but when I picked up the first issue, or it was the second, I was with you, wasn't I?
I think so.
We went to, when he came out for Comic-Con. Yeah, and I looked at the second issue on the rack, and the art is really standout art. It's extremely good art compared to, you know, average art that you'll see in a DC comic, in my opinion. It really does distinguish itself. It's not just average, everyday comic art. I really thought it was above the bar art. So I picked up those first two issues, and I really liked them. And I've been reading the series. And, you know, because, again, I thought the same way. I'm like, okay, I'm reading the JSA series. Do I really need another mini-series? Do I need a, you know, never been that thrilled with Cobra, and all the same stuff you just said was kind of my thinking on when I decided to pass on this miniseries in the first place. But in actually picking up and looking at the series in the comic shop, I was like, wow, that's actually pretty decent, you know. And I brought it home, read it, and enjoyed it. And I've been liking it ever since for, again, a lot of the same reasons that you enumerated. I'm not especially sure why it couldn't have been just a normal arc in JSA, but, you know, here it is. They're giving it to us, and it's a good story. So,
oh, it certainly could have been a regular arc in JSA. I don't think there's any question about that. But I think they realized they could double up. They could, you know, use a different creative team than they have on the JSA title. You know, because, I mean, that was Geoff Johns all the way up until it changed over to the current team of Bill Willingham and, you know, the new artists and stuff. So if they had put this in between those, it would have seemed like a filler arc and potentially, I don't say risk the reputation of the JSA series, but you know what I mean.
Given how good it is.
You know, I agree, but people still
would. Seems to me like they could have just made this the new team on JSA and, you know, been on their way.
True.
You know?
True. And I don't think.
Because you had a lot of people are loving the JSA right now and, you know, more, you know, they don't like the JLA. I mean, I've heard this expressed, you know, when I talk to people at cons and at other places, you know, say, oh, you know, I love the JSA, and it's more that they love it because, you know, the Geoff Johns writing, than they like the characters in and of themselves. And the reason I say that is because, you know, those same people who are loving the JSA were also pretty easy to bail on the series when the creative team switched and also not particularly thrilled about going out and buying this particular miniseries, where if you really love the characters, you're going to try out those characters and get them regardless of how they're being presented. Whereas here, you know, we see that a lot of people are lately, it seems, more followers of a particular creative team, whether they know it or not, because, and I'm guilty of it myself. And I think a lot of it has to do with there's just so many comics out there and a lot of people are always trying to prune back their list, you know, because there's just so many things to buy. I mean, there's more things to buy than almost everybody has money to buy, you know, with.
Yeah.
And you just want to kind of get the best stuff for the dollars that you're spending. And you're wanting to go for things that you're relatively certain you're going to like, you know, for the money. And there's a lot of different reasons. It's maybe a good topic, you know. Come out on the forum and start a thread. Let's have a discussion about it, because it's an interesting concept of, you know, what causes someone to jump on and off a series.
Well, and certainly any time they do a change of creative teams, that's one of them. And if they had done this as a regular JSA arc, some people would have jumped off because, well, this isn't Geoff Johns. Some people might have jumped off at the end of this because it's yet another creative team shift when they would have gone to Bill Willingham if they just kind of inserted that in between. So, I mean, I get why they pulled it out, both in terms of lowering that risk. I don't say double dipping, but having two JSA stories running concurrently, you know, allowed them to get, you know, more issues out simultaneously.
Right.
And I think, while a lot of people are ignoring this miniseries that would probably be enjoying it, I think it's done well enough that DC is going to be starting up a second JSA series.
Right.
But, I mean, hell, you know, any successful title these days, both Marvel and DC are going to turn into a franchise if they can.
Yeah, certainly.
So I gave this a 4. It's right on the edge of a 5. And something I do strongly recommend this series.
I also gave it a 4. It's a very good series, though. And I think people who buy it in trade, this would be a definitely an excellent trade to get a hold of. I am making that as a premonition right now because we're only up to issue 4 of a 6-issue series. But certainly, as it's gone so far, it's been an extremely good series, and again, you know, certainly above average for DC Comics.
Well, and based on how it's been so far, I see little risk of it, you know, just turning into crap with the last two issues. I just don't see that happening.
Right, right.
There have been a few others where you get about two-thirds of the way through and you think, you know, this could still go either way. But, again, I'm loving the series and recommend it. So
our next book, Vengeance of the Moon Knight number one, I had extremely low expectations coming into this one. You know, we're kind of like when we were talking about getting this one, I was like, oh, let's take the bullet for our listeners and, you know, get this series and try it out. And I think to some extent that was helped by the fact that DCBS had it for something like 75 cents or something. So it wasn't a tremendous monetary risk for us to try out the number one issue, which, you know, I thank Cameron on a regular basis for having really excellent deals on first issues to allow you to try out a new series, which, you know, I mean, he's doing for a business reason too, kind of like the, you know, the crack dealer who's, you know, giving you your first hit of something for free or whatnot. You know, he's trying to get people to try out new things. If they like it, then maybe they're going to be a regular pull list customer on it. So, you know, I got this book and I read it and I liked it a lot more than I liked the previous Moon Knight series. Greg Hurwitz, who's writing this one, you know, he wrote a pretty decent story. I mean, you got some nice action moving along, some things happen. It seemed like there's a decent enough introduction to the character. If you're not already completely familiar to the character, you can kind of get into it and understand what's going on with it. Nice action, kind of a cliffhanger or last page, not really a cliffhanger, but an action beat on the last page that I'm just getting tired of in Marvel Comics. That, you know, you have this like in almost every new series that comes along with the vigilante kind of character. I mean, they did the same thing with the new Punisher series.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I wish we could. You want to do a spoiler on it? It's like, it's not even like it.
I would say, yeah, go ahead.
And it's like the last page, the Sentry shows up, right? And it's like, okay, you know, we're going to get Sentry crammed down our throat now in issue two. Why does the Sentry show up in like, he did the same thing in the Punisher? And the Sentry as a character, I just have never liked. He's supposed to be Superman, essentially, and I don't know. It's he should just be able to swoop in and snatch up Moon Knight and have him in Riker's Island. Same thing with Punisher before the guy could blink.
Yeah.
If he actually had the powers that he's supposed to have, and that never happens. But I don't know. Something about the issue, you know, Moon Knight's running around shooting guns all over the place. It's, you know, lots of action, lots of over-the-top action. I think this will be a series that'll click with a lot of people. Greg Hurwitz, he did a good job, I thought, on playing down while still retaining aspects of the character that were really bugging me about the last incarnation, and that's the essentially the schizophrenia, you know, the him having these mental manifestations of Bushmaster everywhere he looks. That's been kind of played down, and it's hopefully not going to be a lengthy and, how do I want to say it, hobbling factor of the character. You know, if it's played as kind of a background element, it'll probably be okay. It was too much in the forefront in the last series.
Well, I went into this with low expectations as well. The previous Moon Knight series is one of the few Marvel superhero titles I've dropped. And I dropped it twice, because we gave it a second shot when it crossed over with Thunderbolts or some such. So I was curious, but again, not expecting much from it. Haven't pre-ordered any issues after number one. And at this point, I'm not feeling the need to. I didn't dislike the issue, but I mean, there are a couple of things that were just so over the top as to be ridiculous. Particularly Moon Knight's entrance into the series. We start.
Yeah, that big ball thing that he comes down in.
He's in this huge sphere that goes smashing through, I think, a billboard or two, bounces off, you know, knocks a fire hydrant clean off, comes, you know, sailing into the ground on, like, you know, Broadway or a cross street for that in New York, with this huge, you know, digging a trench kind of a thing as it lands. I mean, so it lands hard. And then it pops open and he comes out on a motorcycle. And I'm like, really? That's how he's getting around town these days? And that just...
Yeah, that'll make the public works department pretty happy there in New York that he's just, like, left this huge hole in the street that's going to need to be fixed. I saw that in passing and thought, really?
I was thinking more he survived that landing. I mean, he had to get bounced around pretty hard on that. But
he's
a
superhero.
I guess. So I didn't really care for that entrance. I thought it was, again, over the top and, you know, just didn't quite work for me. And overall, the rest of the issue was decent, but it failed to hook me. You know, I loved the Moon Knight series they did back in the 90s. And sure, it may not have been, you know, what most people would think of as a great Moon Knight series, but, you know, even when he was in the West Coast Avengers and stuff, I like him as a superhero. He's being kind of sort of treated like a superhero here. There's a really short, like, two-panel cameo by the Fantastic Four, which I thought was completely pointless. And, you know,
Is the Moon Knight series you liked the one that they reprint the first issue of here?
No, I think it's the one after that. The one they reprint here was, I think, the one from the 70s, wasn't it?
No, this had to have been 80s.
Okay. No, you're right, 80s. It was the one after this.
Okay.
The Mark Spector Moon Knight. I don't think I've read this series that they reprint the first of. And go
Very interesting. This is when I loved Moon Knight, but I kind of reread this reprint for nostalgia's sake, because it's probably been 25 years since I read it the first time around. It really, really spotlights how comics writing and comics at Marvel have changed in the last 25 years. Because when this first issue of Moon Knight came out that they reprinted here, this was a top book. This was, you know, the buzz of the day when we were buying this one. Everyone, at least people I knew and at the comic shop I went to, everyone loved this Moon Knight series.
Mm-hmm.
The Bill Sienkiewicz and Doug Mensch one that's reprinted here. But did you read through it?
No, I was late. I didn't have time.
It's a real counterpoint, you know, just the action and how the story's told and everything. It's such a counterpoint to the over-the-top action. It's kind of like the stuff you described in the first half of this issue. It's kind of like a Michael Bay movie,
mm-hmm,
or something, you know, in a comic book.
Yeah,
it's like just totally over the top. Everything happens is just, you know, like you were describing with the motorcycle coming in and ripping up the street and bouncing around. And then when he escapes on the helicopter, he's like swinging along on the ladder, and he's like smashing the Big Apple sign, and he's, you know, just knocking into things, and there's all kinds of mayhem. It's just, boom, here I am. You know, here's this Moon Knight's here.
Yeah, and in that respect, having the backup, you know, feature of the reprint of the old Moon Knight number one does make for an interesting juxtaposition of the now versus the then. But frankly, I would have preferred if the issue was $2.99 and didn't have the reprint.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean,
I dislike being at the staple, turning the page, and getting the final page of the story, you know, because at that point half the book is not the main presentation you bought it for. And of course that last page having, you know, the Sentry saying, you know, I'm guest starring in next issue kind of thing, it's like, yeah, I don't need that either. I didn't hate this. I'm not going to say I won't get future issues, but there was nothing about this that really did enough of a sell for me to say, yeah, I gotta get it.
I think that people should take a look at it. You can certainly browse through it on the rack at the comic shop and probably make a pretty solid determination through that browse through on whether this looks like the kind of book that you would like. And I think there are people that would really enjoy this series.
Oh yeah, I think there are people that would love this. I just wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
And it wasn't bad, it just failed to hook me. So for me,
I gave it a 3.
Yeah, I was going to say, gave it a 3.2. It's a nice middle of the road book. Nice, average, decent quality, but these days for a first issue, you really need to come out of the gate stronger.
This is a series that'll end up on my kind of watch list of, I wouldn't mind reading more issues, but like you, I'm not going to go out of my way to add it to my pull list. If I see the issues on sale somewhere, I'll certainly pick them up. But it's not something that I have an absolute need to be picking up as it comes out.
Yeah.
Shall we move to our indie selection, Atomic Robo and the Shadow from Beyond Time, number 5 of 5.
I enjoyed this miniseries. It's back to that great Atomic Robo sense of humor. They've got good action. They had some great sci-fi elements to this. I mean, the scenes in Elsewhen I thought were fun. I loved the interaction between, the characters there. This is one of the few stories that I think successfully told itself across multiple time periods. Because typically I've seen stories where, with the Star Trek novels, they would try to tell a story that spans each generation and it just feels kind of forced or whatever. And with Atomic Robo, they span from, pretty much current day back at least 30 years, if not further. I'd have to go check the dates for the different scenes and stuff.
Well, the first scene with Tesla and all that is I think it's in the teens of, it's 100 years ago.
That's what I was thinking. I just couldn't remember. It covers at least 4 or 5 distinct time periods and does it well. So it's a sci-fi version of Hellboy almost. There are some really cool sci-fi concepts and whatnot that get tossed in here and, bandied about. And it doesn't take itself too seriously, yet it takes itself seriously enough to tell a good story. I think this miniseries was better than the second one, although it was good too, and kind of back up to that level of quality and stuff that they really introduced with the first one. And I think this property has just tons of potential, and, I'm looking forward to the next miniseries they do.
Yeah, I'm going to read a word balloon here. If you like this word balloon, you'll like the Atomic Robo series. It's like this: two scientists have just created a giant quantum decomputer. And the one scientist is explaining it to Robo. He says, "When you try to resolve quantum gravity with a special relativity, you're left with an infinite number of solutions. All this perfectly innocent machine does is take those solutions and decompute them down to a single statement, which should take an infinite amount of time, right? But see, all those solutions exist simultaneously. Like, it takes a long time to count to a trillion, but you don't have to count to a trillion if you know it's there. You can skip straight to it. Our machine increases Planck's constant within the CPU until it becomes a wave of every possible state of that CPU, which we collapse into the version that happened to skip straight to the correct solution." It's like crazy science. I love it. This book was fun. That middle Atomic Robo series, The Dogs of War, little miss for me. But the first series, I loved. This is right back to it. I gave this a 5 out of 5. I loved this series. And I would highly recommend picking this up in trade if you skipped it. Great, great series, though.
I would agree with that. 5 out of 5. For me, the word balloon that I think starts to sum this up is the page before the one you just read about that same decomputer. Atomic Robo looks at it and says, "No, look at that thing. It's evil. You built an evil computer." And then goes on to explain all the vents and all the unnecessary ornamentation and crap. That signifies evil. And of course, and he has fun with, the creative team has fun with the conventions of the sci-fi genre. I mean, why on earth would you have a computer with steam vents? You know, on crap like that. So it's great. I mean, the art is, I'm not going to say the most polished, the best, whatever. It's a nice, simple style. It tells the story effectively, does what it needs to, and does it excellently. But if you're looking for a Alex Ross level art or whatever, you're not going to find that here. What you're going to find here is the, again, a simpler style. There's so many ways, and this reminds me of Hellboy without being derivative of Hellboy. The art style's different, but it's the same kind of simplicity and would almost lend itself to an animation kind of a thing. This is a property I really think if they were to do as a series of movies, a television series, or something like that, would quickly garner a huge audience. And I'd like to see the comic get more readers and stuff, but, you know, comic audience is just smaller in general.
Excellent, excellent series. Highly recommended. Anyone who... And just the way it interplayed back and forth, it was kind of interesting as I was reading the issues because they didn't really... You know, each issue, as you're reading through the series, you know, kind of jumped between the different time zones, and it kind of took a little bit to kind of figure out what was going on, but not in a bad or confusing way. You know what I mean? It's
yeah. Well, typically when stories are bouncing between time zones, you either get something kind of like Lost, where you've got the main time and then flashbacks, or you've got something that's so spread out and so convoluted that they're jumping between time is an artificial way of making the story suspenseful or, you know, revealing things as they want to. Whereas here, the jumps between time feel very natural in the flow of the story. And that's not easy to do.
It's not. And they, you know, Brian Clevenger and Scott Wegner, or Wegner, we've got the German pronunciation of the W, did a very good job in this series. Again, highly recommended. Check it out.
Yep.
I wanted to just give a quick mention of a number one that came out this week, Beasts of Burden, by Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson. I would be surprised if this series doesn't get nominated for something. Jill Thompson's painted style on this is just fabulous. It's a story of a bunch of dogs and a couple of cats thrown in who live in a place called Burden Hill, which is a little town. That seems like it's in New England, although it's not exactly stated, that has some dark and sinister things going on. And these dogs and cats are kind of paranormal investigators. Strange paranormal things happen, and the dogs and cats help investigate and solve these mysteries. Now, these characters were seen previously as single stories in the various Dark Horse Book of Haunting, Dark Horse Book of Witchcraft, Dark Horse Book of the Dead, etc. But now we're getting the whole mini-series on it. It's not hardcore horror. It's got a supernatural element. But it seemed very suitable as an all-ages book. I mean, it's got a little bit, you know, they fight this big giant frog in it, and there's a little bit of, you know, blood and stuff in it, but not anything that a kid couldn't handle. I think like a 8 to 10-year-old could easily handle this, and I think this would be a great book if you're a parent to pick this up and read it with your kids, especially if the kids – like dogs and or cats. It's a really charming series. I give this a 5 out of 5, and I really just wanted to point it out because it's from Dark Horse. It's something that might or probably will miss most people's radars, but it's a really highly recommended book for people to check out.
Cool.
Beyond that, we got a great issue of Blackest Night this week.
Yeah. I've really been enjoying what they're doing in Blackest Night. That's, I think, one of the only other two comics I read this week besides what we covered. The other was Brave and the Bold with Dial H for Hero. And I had kind of mixed feelings on that. It was a good issue, and I'm choosing to believe it's set in the past, or otherwise they rebooted Robbie Reed and made him a, you know, 15-year-old again.
I'm not exactly sure where any of those Brave and the Bold books are set right now.
I'm assuming most of them are modern day, and there are a couple that more or less have to be modern day. But this one, if it's modern day, invalidates a number of other things that have happened. Because it's got Robbie Reed with the original Hero Dial. And, you know, so it's ambiguous enough. They don't have anything that firmly dates it in any point in time. So it could be Batman at the beginning of his career. It could be the current Batman. You know, it's hard to tell. So I'm going with Batman earlier in his career. In other words, 8 to 10 years ago, maybe 12, depending how old you think Batman is.
I kind of think of it as the classic Brave and the Bold, which Brave and the Bold always kind of existed on Earth B, which was Earth Brave and the Bold, because some stories in the old classic Brave and the Bold, you know, the Batman team-up part of it, you know, they could have happened in current DC continuity, and other ones just couldn't have, but it was just kind of like, don't worry about it. Just like it's Batman teaming up with someone, and here's a story. And that was kind of acknowledged, I think, at the time by DC, that that's kind of how Brave and the Bold worked. And that seems to be how these stories are going, too. I mean, some of them, like the Blue Beetle one, I mean, that could have happened, you know, in current time or not. You know, this one, certainly there's a little more overt, you know, that doesn't exactly work kind of thing, you know.
But that's all I've had time to read. I got a bunch of stuff this week. I got like 40 comics or something and a book or two. Actually, I just got one book. It was a How to Draw thing. Not that I'm expecting to ever learn how to draw. I'm going by the osmosis theory. If I get enough art books, I'll just suddenly become an artist. I haven't worked yet. But this was another really long work week, so I haven't had time to do my reading, and hopefully I'll get some of that done this weekend.
I also am still behind. I was out of town all week. I will be out of town next week, too. So, I read Walking Dead. Walking Dead and Blackest Night, top of the stack books, right? Walking Dead was really good.
Cool.
As usual.
Well, and again, the Blackest Night stuff, I think they're just continuing to knock that stuff out of the park. You know, the story is moving along. I think you're getting the core of it in the miniseries, as you should. The tie-ins I've been reading and stuff play nice into it and enhance it well. And I'm really looking forward to where they kind of go with all of this stuff. I think DC's got a hit on its hands here, and I hope they can kind of, you know, leverage that as best as possible.
I enjoyed finally getting to see the Indigo Tribe. I'm going to be kind of interested to see how Johns gets with this untranslatable language thing, if there's going to be some explanation to that, because it's certainly something going on there.
Yeah. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Wednesday Comics number 12 from DC, Wolverine Giant-Sized, Old Man Logan number 1 from Marvel, and Underground number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.